real change comes through perseverance, as we all know, Joe, and sometimes it means making people feel uncomfortable. Change can be difficult, and it's unsettling for some, and I found that early in that process, just something we have to always be expecting and prepared to learn from the experience, because that's where, through this challenge, a lot of learnings and advances can occur.
Hello, and welcome to Dwayne Morris DEI 360 with Joe West. I'm Yumika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm. On today's episode, Joe reconnects with his friend, mentor, and hero, Tom Sager, General Counsel at DuPont.
Hello, this is Joe West. I'm a partner at Dwayne Morris. I also have the privilege of serving as the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. I will say that when I started doing this podcast, the very first person that I said to myself that I want to interview for my podcast is my hero, my friend, my mentor, and someone who is absolutely the gold standard when it comes to corporate diversity, diversity and inclusion in the legal sector, and frankly, what it means to be a leader in this profession and a general counsel, and that's Tom Sager. And so I have the privilege of interviewing my friend Tom Sager. How are you, Tom?
Joe, I'm just great, and I know we can't go on about how long we've known each other and how much we've benefited from each other's support and collaboration, but I love you dearly, and you've been a one of the people that I identify with regularly, but given your activity and voice and support for DE&I, and it's so important in this environment, believe me. And after practice law for 40 years or plus, with 38 with DuPont, I can honestly say to the listeners that this is an area of critical importance to you personally and professionally, and to the profession at large. So I'm delighted to participate.
Well, I can tell right now that the typical length of our podcast interviews will be exceeded by this. And I'm glad to know that, because I'm so happy to spend time with you. Tom, first of all, let's talk about your illustrious career, particularly the fantastic legacy that you created for the profession as the general counsel at DuPont. You were among those general counsels who long before what we find now, where there's obviously a critical mass of GCs who are fluent in issues around diversity, who understand it better, who are actually communicating the expectations both internally and externally around these issues, long before there was even a handful of companies focused on that, you were actually taking meaningful steps within DuPont and within the corporate legal ecosystem to make meaningful change around diversity, equity, and inclusion. What was it that drove you back then? And how is it that you became sort of this icon in the DEI space?
Well, Joe, you're awfully kind. I think I was the beneficiary of a program that was initiated by some truly visionary leaders at the DuPont company at the time. That would have been in the 70s, which I'm kind of dating myself, but the whole idea was being DuPont needed to transform because it was seen as an old line chemical company. And this general counsel and his CEO said, well, time now is to step it up because we're losing miserably in the competitive market because we're not seen as a leader in this space. And it's one that we can have an impact if we do it in the appropriate way. So they began a program, and instead of hiring laterals from law firms, they decided to go after young, new law school graduates, of which I was one, maybe six or eight. And they hired us in DuPont because they saw us as the future leaders. And it was a very diverse group, African-American attorneys, women as well. And it was a great group, highly energized. And through this program, they took us by the hand and led us to begin an approach to diversity that was unlike any other at the time, because we did not have a way or a route to get there, but we knew that through our leaders that they had our backs and they were going to support us if we were willing to venture forward and make the case for diversity through our own activities, actions, and words. So that was in the 70s. And I joined DuPont in 76, so the program had already kind of taken root, but they were looking for people like myself and others to lead the way, so to speak. And so they sent us out off for a grueling week with the likes of, I think it was AT&T, and there were young professionals, mostly lawyers and others from the legal profession, but also senior executives who were willing to invest in how one to begin to better identify the importance of diversity and inclusion to our respective organizations, but also beyond. And that's kind of how things got started. And the thing I would impart to people is the number one lesson for me, that well-intentioned and balanced programs, which I think we had at the time, although we always had our detractors, but an organization like ours, which is balanced and intentioned, well-intentioned, it might have many unintentioned consequences, and many of which can be extremely positive for the organization, whether DuPont or AT&T or our customers or clients. But it's extremely positive for many individuals, including white males like myself. So it's not a program designed to the exclusion of others, but to advance the mission and the focus of the program to benefit our respective organizations, but far many more people who are otherwise committed to the vision with respect to the importance of diversity in our profession.
So Tom, you hit on a very, very important point that I want to touch upon. And that is the fact that removing barriers, providing opportunities for diverse talent to thrive and grow, not only benefits underutilized, marginalized categories of talent, but also it inures to the benefit of the whole. It actually benefits to the entirety of the organization.
I tell you, that's exactly right. So people look and said, well, why should I invest in that when I'm going to be sacrificed? And that's not the case at all. If you've got your heart in the right place and you're willing to invest in a program to do just that, for the benefit of the organization, of course, you'll find that it inures to your benefit as well, which it certainly did for me.
Yeah. Now, you also mentioned something you kind of alluded to some pushback. I think we see a lot of pushback in some quarters, particularly in various state legislatures, and other sort of public officials who I think have the misguided notion that focusing on issues of inclusion and inclusiveness. I mean, there's even, as you know, Tom, just throughout sort of like the political spectrum now, some pushback on these issues. Can you talk about that a little bit and give me your thoughts about it? And it seems as if the corporate space has finally started embracing diversity, but in some quarters you see sort of like a pendulum swing in the other direction.
Exactly. And as you know, because you've been on the same journey as I have, it's through your interactions in whatever context, whether it's diversity training sessions or workshops or surveys or professional exchanges, you're always going to find there's going to be naysayers, and they'll breed a sense of cynicism or disillusionment or even distrust. And so that is something that folks like us never got discouraged or deterred by, because we understood the importance of this engagement, and because we fervently believe, as you did and I did, that the mission and that we've realized the meaningful advances it takes in this area to keep at it. And it's uncomfortable for many, and we should recognize that, you know that, but it's not a reason for us to withdraw in any of this sense, because advances in this area are going to be incremental by definition. And a few seem probably very sustainable. And that's important, because over time, as we continue to labor in this field, we're going to see how leadership is going to take hold and be prepared to withstand those naysayers. And we should also recognize if there's a change in the leadership in our respective organizations, it's an opportunity for a major setback, particularly if the new individual that comes in doesn't buy in or otherwise sees this as the soup du jour, if you will. So that's all the more reason that the environment within our respective organizations is so important, and the fabric and culture of the importance of diversity and how it provides competitive advantage is so important. And of course, the tone at the top is very real, and the culture that's in place all but eliminates a risk of change in the heart or the direction of the company if that culture is placed in something that can weather this pushback. And of course, we've all experienced that in some way or another. But I had the benefit, and I want to say again, that the visionaries at DuPont saw the importance of this because as a competitive advantage, but also important for any number of good reasons, including valuing people and having respect and inclusion and enable an organization to more benefit from a more diverse perspective, and how that brings value to a competitive advantage to a company like DuPont. And we are at the time had been around for almost 200 years. So we had a lot of convincing to do, but the point being that it's not always going to be a fun journey, but the real change comes through perseverance, as we all know, Joe, and sometimes it means making people feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
Change can be difficult, and it's unsettling for some, and I found that particularly soon early in that process. The white males, particularly those between 30 and 40 or maybe even 50, found this alarming because they felt their control or their stature was going to be diminished to this initiative. And just something we have to always be expecting and prepared to learn from the experience, because that's where through this challenge, a lot of learnings and advances can occur.
Well, you know, Tom, I like to cite to people a study that Citigroup published in September of 2020, where they found that because of biases and systemic racism in various parts of the economy, whether it's healthcare disparities, income disparities, lack of access to entrepreneurship for African Americans, that in the first 20 years of this century, the U.S. Right. lost $16 trillion in GDP.
Right.
$16 trillion with a T in GDP. Right. Because of those barriers. Now, if we had eliminated those barriers, those biases, it would have certainly benefited the people of color who were on the receiving end of the biases, but equally, if not more important, it would have benefited the whole, you know?
Right.
And I think that's exactly the point that regardless of your race, gender, ethnicity, if you're a part of the organization and you're doing something that removes barriers to everyone and allows for greater growth and development and success of the enterprise, everybody benefits.
Right. Well, that's so well taken. I'll tell you, I keep on harping on the point that advances in this area within our own professions and organizations do not have to come at the expense of others.
No.
And that the landscape, the political landscape is changing rapidly. There's dramatic shifts in demographics, globalization, of course, and the world is becoming increasingly more competitive because it's flatter, smaller, and more connected. But my only point, I attended a corporate officers meeting at DuPont, which was designed to focus on this very subject. And the professor from Northwestern made presented a discussion about marketing and innovation at DuPont. And he talked about global network innovation. And he made three or four points that resonated with me. And I hope running on too much, but first, he said, DuPont can't go it alone to sustain the pace of innovation. That's a given, as we all know now, even in our proudest moment with respect to organizations. We just can't do it alone. Second, there are far more smart people outside of DuPont, in this case, the other audiences that we're talking to, that we cannot hire. And finally, the global talent pool out there in developed markets is dwarfed those outside our own offices and suites. So it's about realizing the changing dynamic of the world and how, if we adapt as a corporation, regardless of how sophisticated and innovative we think we are, we need to be more progressive and active and engaged with the rest of the world in order to bring competitive advantage to our respective companies or law firms.
So Tom, let me pivot real quick to talk about my friend and my hero, Tom Sayer. You're not gonna stop me. Prior to my current firm, I was the CEO of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association, which, as you know,
you are awesome, by the way.
Well, you're very kind. It's celebrating its 25th anniversary now. One of the driving forces, if not the driving forces, and a founder of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association was Tom Sager. Tom, tell us how and why MCCA came to be, what your role was, and why you thought it was important, not just to focus on diversity within your own company, but more broadly throughout the profession itself through an organization like MCCA.
I tell you, you're giving me too much credit, but I think it was a collective effort by a handful of people. And literally, there were only five of us, I think, at the time. Of course, the general counsel and my boss at the time, Stacey Mobley, was actively involved in behind the scenes. He's African-American, by the way. And yes. That was not a motivating factor for me. I just was looking for support from within. And he was obviously one I could lean on. We also had Sharon Lehow, an African-American woman who worked for me at the time. And we had Lloyd Johnson, who was the consultant, which I think, Lloyd, you know well, but he was very active in this space. And we just had a good chemistry among three or four or five people. And we charted a course which we thought might resonate with others. And lo and behold, as I reached out to my counterparts, at that time I was number two at DuPont, but later became general counsel, they all began to become extremely excited and with respect to what the message we were imparting to them as to how it could bring competitive advantage to their respective organizations, and how by serving as a social justice advocate and a source of inspiration for young women and attorneys of color, they could become far more competitive and able to advance the mission of their respective companies. So that was kind of the group. It was a very tight-knit group, five, and then all of a sudden we started to, all right, who's got this person? Who's got that person? And Joe, I think you were at Walmart at the time, were you not?
That's right. I was at, Tom, this gives me a chance to tell one of my favorite Tom. Tom stories. Your influence, Tom, even when you didn't know me, has facilitated my career at every step of the way. I actually was in-house at Entergy Corporation in New Orleans.
Right.
And you know, we ended up moving to Houston after the hurricane. And I was working at Entergy satellite offices in Houston, and Entergy joined MCCA as a member organization. And at an MCCA dinner, I met Tom Mars, who was the GC at Walmart, and he personally recruited me to Walmart.
That was wonderful. What a brilliant move on his part.
Well, it was very, very fortuitous and fortunate for me, but it was through MCCA that I got my job at Walmart. And while I was at Walmart, I went there at the end of 2006. 2009, I got promoted to the head of the outside counsel management function. And I found myself on a panel at the ABA annual meeting focused on alternative fee arrangements. And let me just tell you, this was a powerhouse panel. I still don't know how I was selected, but on the panel, this is for the benefit of the audience, was David Boies of Boies Schiller, who was one of the most famous trial lawyers in the country. He argued the Bush v. Gore case and a few other Supreme Court cases. Amy Schulman.
Truly a legend.
He's a legend. Yep. Amy Schulman, who was a GC at Pfizer at the time.
Right.
Tom Sager, the GC of DuPont and one of the pioneers, not just in diversity, but in alternative fee arrangements. And me, you know, it was like that Sesame Street thing where it's like, which of these things is not, doesn't belong here, that would have been me, because I was on this panel with these legends. And after the panel was over, Tom Sager invited me to have lunch with him. And that was the first time you and I really got to spend some time together. And you were kind enough to offer to sort of tutor me on alternative fee arrangements. I was able to implement a lot of what you taught me at Walmart, saved the company a whole bunch of money, and we became friends as a result of that. Fast forward a few years later, 2 years later, 2011, when my predecessor, Vita Richardson, was about to leave MCCA, you called me up and told me that my name had been mentioned by a lot of people, including Vita, as a successor, that there was an executive search taking place, and you asked me if I would be interested. It was because you were so thoughtful and kind and supportive as my mentor that I even...
He's trying to say such a pain in the ass, you two, so you all know.
That's the reason why I tossed my hat in the ring and ended up getting the MCCA job. And it was because of MCCA that I got the job at Walmart. It was because of my work at Walmart that I met you. And it was because I met you that I took the job as the CEO of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association and became focused on diversity issues. I have you to thank for that, Tom Sager.
Well, thank you. And therein lies some of the reason for our success. We identified the MCCA as a focal point for our energies and efforts and a basis to promote diversity and seeking other like-minded corporations. And with Joe and Vita and their handful of wonderful leaders, and now it's Jean Lee, she is so committed to the cause. I mean, I hope you all are able to attend. I know, Joe, you are, but yes. She's just so taken by the advances of MCCA in the 25 years, and she says we've got a platform now like we've never had before. So it's a credit to people like yourself and others that bought into the vision and saw how important it is to the profession, particularly in light of the changing demographics and the political landscape changing of force, the world getting smaller and more competitive, and how cross-border collaborations are now a routine. And so it plays so beautifully into the importance of, if your corporation is truly competitive and wants to be a player, they need to pay attention to this dynamic and invest heavily in it. And again, that's not about you. Because when we went into the legal profession, Joe, you and I remember, it was dominated by white males, typically 50 or older, and it was about control. And it was a tough sell for some. But I mean, the point being, for the handful that joined in with us and put their hand on the bag, it was not a hard sell. And with that, was create a lot of energy with respect to the importance of this issue and how it could bring tremendous value to not only DuPont or Walmart or whoever or energy, but others who were looking from the outside in and want to be a player and wanted to learn from the efforts of others and become inspirations for the next wave of leadership. And that's kind of what we held tight to our vision as to how we could make a difference in the profession by providing benefit to others who've had the same vision, and as younger people have more energy and probably more insight and could create a far better and energized body of young attorneys. And by the way, it's far beyond just attorneys. We subscribe to DuPont that this is inclusion as we really mean it, and this includes regardless of race, gender, and national origin, but it also includes paralegals and support staff. So the whole point was this. This is an inclusive effort with an eye to having impact far beyond our respective companies and benefit from the vision and creativity of others.
That model, Tom, is absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons why when we started our employee resource groups, at our firm, we have ERGs for both the attorneys and the staff as well. So that whole concept, that whole model is fantastic. So In the minutes that we have left, I have to get in one more Tom Sager story, and this is my absolute favorite. Tom, you know this story well because it involves our girl Taylor.
Oh my gosh. what a sweetheart.
2015, for reasons that I still can't figure out, the Delaware Barristers Association decided to give me their Lifetime Achievement Award for diversity. I was stunned because there were two prior recipients. The first was Tom Sager. The second was Joe Biden. And I would have been the third.
Who's he?
That's what people would say. Who's this guy? And so when they asked me who I wanted to introduce me, I didn't even hesitate. I said I wanted Tom Sager. And so at the head table, I was sitting next to Tom, and between us was my date for the evening, my then 14-year-old daughter, Taylor. Of course, at the event, it was a beautiful black tie event at the DuPont Hotel. Everybody wanted time with Tom Sager. And so people were constantly coming and vying for his time. Tom was so sweet and charming and nice with Taylor. He absolutely swept her off her feet. And to this day, I mean, she's a senior in college now. Every time I talk to Taylor, she says, "How's Mr. Tom doing? Please tell him I help him and tell him I love him."
She's a beautiful young lady. And boy, I'll tell you, we hit it off. And you recall, I forget the event, but I saw her and gave her a gift. I think she had just been, I don't know, successfully selected for a dance company
That's right, at the Joffrey Ballet. So that was
a wonderful moment.
Yeah, that was at an MCCA gala where she came with me. And you sure did, gave her a beautiful gift. And people know about Tom Sager, the general counsel. They know about Tom Sager, the corporate executive. They know about him as the gold standard in diversity and inclusion. But I told that story because I want people to understand Tom Sager, the man, and the reason why I have so much love and respect and admiration for you, Tom.
Back at you, Joe. And if we're making you too sick on the phone, I mean, it's so genuine and real. So I was so looking forward to this exchange, except for the audio glitch. But hopefully you all will be able to parse this in a way that it'll resonate with others, that it's not about you, it's about helping others. And then take that as a way to benefit your respective organizations and advance diversity, inclusion, and equity in the profession, because it's sorely needed. And as I said, with the change in leadership at any one organization, it could fall on deaf ear and then lose initiative for making the important inroads that are needed to be made. And right now, in this environment of ours, I talked about the political landscape and changing demographics and, of course, the competitive world. It is so critically important to our country and profession that people begin to believe, if they haven't already, the importance of diversity in the legal profession. And I know the legal profession is leading by example, but it has to transcend just the lawyers, because I think that's where the challenge comes.
Let me ask you one question. We got about another minute and a half to 2 minutes, but I'm going to ask you this last question. What is it that you would like your legacy to be when people, 100 years from now, when people talk about you and your work, what is it that you'd like your legacy to be?
I just want them to kind of define what we've tried to accomplish, Joe, and wasn't about our own self-interest, but it was about elevating the contributions and the talents of diverse professionals and women and attorneys of color, and recognize what a tremendous resource they are and how they can bring competitive advantage, but also help us pave the way outside our respective organizations. And that, to me, is a huge tribute to us, because we're not doing it for our own aggrandizement, but it's about how we can truly benefit the profession and far beyond to our active leadership and role. And I hope, hopefully, the leaders of today don't see this as just another thing to promote for self-interest, because that's not what we're about, Joe.
No. Tom, I can't thank you enough for the time you spent. Thank you for what you've meant to the profession, to the nation, really, and the world, but especially what you've meant to me. I just appreciate you, and I love you so much, so thank you.
I love you dearly, and folks, so this is sincere.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.